With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
You're listening to No Huddle Radio on the Packers Talk Radio Network. Your home for in-depth and thoughtful Packers analysis. I am joined by my good friend Gil Martin. He's a writer for the Packers Post and Cheesehead TV, and I'm your host, JJ Leahy. We're here to talk Packers because you're all here for one thing, and that's a love for Green Bay football. Gil, have you filled out your March Madness bracket yet? Are you doing that?
I have not filled out my bracket yet, but that activity will be happening sometime today.
Okay. I filled out mine this morning, actually. I'm in two pools, and had a lot of fun doing this one. I just don't pay a ton of attention to men's basketball. As I was going through all the, 64 games that I got to pick, I'm looking at them, and I'm like, well, there's about five teams in here that I think I have a good handle on how they're doing this year. But March Madness is so much fun, man. And hey, so we're recording this on Wednesday. The episode is going to get posted late on Wednesday. It is the start of the new league year for the NFL. And so by the time this hits your ears, depending on when you press play, the Packers will either have a few minutes left to get under the cap or will already be under the cap. And so we're not going to cover some of the moves that we don't really know about yet, but we wanted to talk about some stuff that's already happened and how it affects this football team. Obviously they cut Billy Turner, and then we found out that they lost Lucas Patrick to the Bears. And so those two moves combined to leave you pretty thin at the offensive line position. Gil, as it stands today, where would you rank offensive line, particularly tackles, as it comes to the Packers' draft needs? So, rank it first, second, third. Where's the importance on this?
It would have to be in my top three for sure. I would probably say it's either one or two.
Okay. I think that's about where I'm at as well. I think that depending on how things go with Devontae, and if the Packers do in fact release Randall Cobb, I think it would be easy to have wide receiver leapfrog offensive line right now. But right now, I think you have to put those two as basically your first and second most important needs in the draft.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And realistically, especially there are two positions, well, three positions where you have to keep investing in them on a regular basis on the first 2 days of the draft. And I'm thinking about cornerback, offensive tackle, and edge rusher. Those three positions, you want to replenish that fairly constantly. And at least one of those three positions should be addressed on the first 2 days of the draft every year, if not two of them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Looking at offensive line, when it comes to tackles, obviously you have David Bakhtiari and you're hoping that he's going to be ready to play. You have Dennis Kelly is not currently under contract with the team, but it feels kind of like a no-brainer to me to bring him back and let him be your swing tackle at least. Let him compete with Yosh Nijman and whoever you may draft in the first or second round this year for your right tackle job in training camp and OTAs. You just mentioned Yosh Nijman. Elton Jenkins, I don't think it's prudent to try and include him in your plans any earlier than the middle of the season. So you have to have a different plan A for your right tackle to start the season. And that's kind of it for guys who can play tackle. Obviously, there is, you know, John Runyan did play tackle at Michigan. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know, you know, looking at who he is and what he's done in the league, I don't have a ton of confidence that he projects as an NFL tackle. No. It's just a little bit different in college. When it comes to the interior, you got a number of bodies that you feel pretty confident about as long as you can lock up the two tackle positions. But to me, I think, you know, you and I spent a lot of time last week talking about the merits of keeping or moving on from Billy Turner and from Lucas Patrick. And I think that we didn't spend a ton of time on the idea of moving on from both of them. And in fact, it almost to me felt like we were wasting our time talking about whether you'd move on from those guys, because you know how much the Packers, just as a team, as an organization, love both of those players. It felt like, even though there were good arguments to be made, and we did make them for why you'd move on from those guys, felt like it's all a moot point anyways, because the Packers still are going to bring them back. They're both gone. And I think I would have liked to have kept one of them. And I get why you move on from each one, but the fact that they're both gone does leave a significant hole, especially compared to when you look at what they got out of the offensive line last year. And it was not enough. And it was, I would say, the number one reason 2 years in a row now why you got knocked out of the playoffs was offensive line depth. And so you look at where they are now, they are considerably weaker than they were the past 2 years. And even on the interior, you kind of only have one backup player who could fill in if Josh Myers gets hurt. Jake Hansen is kind of the only center that you have available. There is Michael Manet from Penn State that the Packers picked up, I think maybe after the season ended. And, you know, he was a guy that I was always kind of interested in. He was a 7th round pick by the Cardinals last year, but he cannot be your plan B behind Josh Myers. I don't know that I have a ton of confidence either in Jake Hansen as the plan B behind Josh Myers. That was one of the best things that Lucas Patrick brought to the table, was that he was not only versatile at any of the interior positions, but he was quite competent at any one of those.
Yep.
When he was under center or at right or left guard, you felt fine about it.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't feel great, but you knew you were in good hands, that nothing horrific was going to happen over the course of most of the games. And look, the other option at center, although obviously for the first half of the season, it can't be an option. Elgton Jenkins can move to center if need be. He played that position in college, but again, that's not what you want your plan B to be. You're then moving a lot of parts around on your offensive line. So yeah, depth definitely becomes an issue, because the one thing that both Billy Turner and Lucas Patrick had in common, they were versatile. Turner could play 4 out of the 5 positions on the offensive line. Patrick could competently start at 3 of them. All of a sudden, you know, your interior depth is gone. Backup center, I'm not ready to say that Jake Hansen is ready to start if called upon. Right. What has he played? 3 offensive plays his entire career.
Not only that, but I think that Jake Hansen might have been cut and re-signed by the Packers more times than he has played a snap for the Packers.
Yeah, I think game. That's safe to say. And if you count times on the PUP list or IR, you could even, you know, 2 or 3 times that number. But yeah, so I mean, there is that issue. But the other thing is, based on the way Brian Gutekunst has handled things during his tenure as GM, you know, day 3, they're picking up at least one interior offensive lineman, probably 2 or 3.
Yeah, looking at the interior, I think you feel some decent confidence in your starters on the interior, actually. But again, depth is an issue. I think you go into the season assuming that John Runyon is your left guard, Royce Newman is your right guard, Josh Myers obviously your center, and then you got a couple depth guys that you don't feel awesome about. But I guess I will point out there's two players on the interior that Packers.com actually lists as a tackle and a guard. And can you guess who those would be? And I will say Elgton Jenkins is listed as only a guard.
Yeah, which is probably an attempt to not pay him more money.
So but, who did they draft as a tackle guard? Two guys. And I'll tell you, both of them are 2021 draft picks.
Cole Van Lannen.
Uh-huh. He's 6'4", 305. He'd be a small tackle, but not horrifically small.
Right. And then you probably also, geez.
Royce Newman is 6'5", 310. So he played tackle for Ole Miss, and he's still listed as tackle and guard. Now, I don't feel awesome about moving either one of those guys to tackle, but it's interesting that the Packers, at least on their official roster, consider those guys as swing players.
Right.
And you know what? At the end of the day, who am I to tell the Packers how to run their team? But looking at some guys in the draft who maybe you look at in round one, obviously one of the guys that I like a lot, Zion Johnson, is the guy I've talked about before. I think he most typically projects as an NFL guard, but he's from Boston College. They run the ball really well there. They're really, really smart players, smart offensive line, smart players in general. That's where A.J. Dillon is from. Zion Johnson and A.J. Dillon were teammates. The thing that you like about Zion is he's pretty massive. He's a little on the short side at 6'3", which is why he projects as a guard, but he's 312 pounds, extremely athletic, very physical guy. And when you factor in his intelligence, he's such a smart player. It feels like a bit of a waste to stick him at guard. you kind of want, I'm just saying, you want your smartest offensive lineman at center and tackle.
Yeah.
Just because the
intelligence of guards, that's all. So
I think that's generally how you would describe the guard position. Typically, not that they're dumb guys, but just that that position does not require the freak intelligence that you are demanding of your tackles and centers. That it's more just about a guy with the size,
right?
And the immovable mass is what you want at guard, but. And at Boston College, they did do a lot of zone running, which the Packers really like to do. I think that he is a fantastic fit, really tough, just hard to move, got just a ton of athleticism and quickness. He moves laterally really well. This is a guy that I'd be really geeked about. And then one guy that you and I were talking about right before we started recording is we found a guy named Bernard Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
He's an offensive tackle from Central Michigan, which is fun fact. That's where my brother goes to school. I debated, you know, should I call up my brother and say, hey, go find Bernard and interview him for No Huddle Radio. So Bernard obviously plays for a really small school, but the couple of the draft analysis that I have read about him do tend to project him as a starting left tackle in the NFL, and the scheme tendencies that they lean into at CMU and that he is projected to be a good fit for is that really wide zone heavy rushing attack, which is like exactly what you're getting in the Matt LaFleur offense or the Kyle Shanahan offense.
My
biggest concern with him is the competition he played against
right
in college, but he's kind of got all the tools. this is a guy that I would be really interested to see, how he does like in his pro day, that kind of stuff. I did not watch him at the combine, but this is a guy who maybe you look at. He might fall to the second round, maybe, and maybe this is an option for you at right tackle.
Yeah, I mean, my concerns, first of all, what I like about him, you talk about the size. He's also a wrestler, so he's got sort of that experience mm-hmm. that I think could be a plus, playing offensive line. My biggest concern, as you said, is the jump from, playing in the MAC conference to playing in the NFL, which is a big jump. Any college player is making a jump, but that's an even bigger one. And then the other thing, for me, is that he's probably a little bit of a reach in the first round for the Packers, but probably he won't be there by the time the Packers pick in the second round. So he's sort of a tweener in that sense as far as value is concerned.
You know what? I 100% agreed with you. And then I went and looked up on NFLMockDraftDatabase.com. where he's being projected, just because I was curious, because similarly, like, I hadn't even heard of the guy. And so I was thinking that he probably was going to be a little bit of a later guy that you'd have to reach for. So far, he has appeared on 22% of all first round mock drafts. His consensus pick is number 26 in the first round, which is where the Titans are picking, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting to me. A lot of the draft analysis that I have read of him, they project him as a second rounder. But then when you actually do the mock drafts, he tends to go a little bit earlier than that. Obviously, one of the things that you like about him the most, he does have the agility. He also has the size. 6'6", 303 pounds, ran a 5.05 40. The guy is everything you want physically. And really comes down to, again, that competition at CMU. And for that reason, I'm a little bit surprised that the draft community is so high on him, because it seems like a lot of the times some of those smaller school guys will get drafted by GMs early, but tends to get kind of missed by, sort of the draft industrial what's the word I'm looking for?
Complex.
Complex. Thank you. when you're recording your second podcast of the day, you start to get a little tongue-tied. But he's a smart guy, though, which is something else that I've seen in his draft comps.
Yeah. I mean, again, I like the kid from what I've seen so far. I will watch some film on him at some point before the draft. But to me, he seems like the perfect slot for him to me would probably be early second round. So he's a little bit of a reach in round one, and he probably won't be there by the end of round two.
Yeah, anywhere between 28 and 56, that really is the Packers' first round. If you don't have confidence that the guy you like is going to be there at pick 56, you have to take him in the first round if you want him.
Right, exactly.
So, and fans will get upset because they'll say, like, oh, come on, this guy was projected at, pick 48 and you took him in the first round. Well, I don't know what to tell you. If, you can only pick where you pick. So you look at the guys who are available and you decide who you like the best. And just because, the draft network likes a guy who they have ranked at 30 does not mean that Brian Gutekunst came to the same conclusion when he was watching his tape. So
no question. And look, you got to pick the guy who has the biggest impact on your team. And that's not the same for all 32 teams in the league based on their needs, their strengths, their weaknesses, and even the specific things they look for in a player. The Packers have a certain type of or certain level of athleticism that they look for. The versatility is a big thing for the Packers when looking at offensive linemen. So, different teams have different things they emphasize, and it's not one size fits all.
Let's talk about wide receivers, because that's the other position that I think is right up there in pretty important territory. And it could move from just like, yeah, you'd like to take this in the first three rounds to, you are in major trouble if you can't get a deal done with Devontae Adams, because right now they don't have any agreement in place for him to play in 2022. He said he won't play on the tag, and they haven't come to an agreement on a contract, which is all understandable. I'm not faulting either side. But the point is, right now, your wide receiver one is Alan Lazard or Randall Cobb. And I don't remember if we said it while we were recording or if we just said it before we started recording. I can't justify bringing back Randall Cobb on a $9.5 million cap hit in 2022. And given the production you got out of him last year, he caught 5 touchdowns all year, and 4 of those came in 2 games. Mm-hmm. And we know that the biggest reason why Brian Gutekunst moved on from Randall Cobb a couple of years ago and didn't want to bring him back is because Cobb is small, tends to get hurt a lot. Now he's considerably older. And guess what? He did get hurt. He missed not quite a half a year, but getting close to it. And you look at when you're trying to factor in the angle of, yeah, well, but Aaron Rodgers insists that he has to come back. He's got to be here because, you know, it's his boy. I just would point out to Aaron Rodgers that, listen, the big talk last year was that you felt like if you had had Randall Cobb in that Bucs championship game when you were trying to score a touchdown down at the end zone, at the end of the game, that if you'd had Randall Cobb, that he would have gotten open, he would have thrown to him. Well, you had Randall Cobb in the Niners playoff game this year, targeted him just one time with a pass that was really deserved to be picked off, and I don't know how anybody could have expected Randall Cobb to haul that in. One target, 0 receptions, that was it. And, you know, the rest of the year, you had a game or two here or there where Cobb would have a really nice play or two that maybe would swing the fate of that game. But on the whole season, his contributions were pretty minimal. And for a guy who was the second highest paid wide receiver last year, even more expensive this year, I just don't know how you can bring him back. And at his age, he's, I think, 31, 32. 31, I'm not sure. I just don't even think I really want him back, even though I love Randall Cobb as a person. I just, in 2022, I don't know how much value he gives you. Plus, you got the entire argument of the stunting of Amari Rodgers' development by mm-hmm. having Randall Cobb there instead. So I don't know. Your wide receiver here, your wide receiver room here is Alan Lazard and EQ and Malik Taylor. That is who the national media has been describing the Packers wide receiver room as for years.
And EQ is an unrestricted free agent, so he may not be back either.
So if you got Devontae back, I think you're expecting to lose MVS to free agency. Maybe they could bring him back, but with the rumors of how much teams are going to be willing to offer him, I don't think the Packers can or should match that.
No, not even close. If you're talking $10 million a year, good luck.
You need help at wide receiver. That's the bottom line. I think the last couple of years I've been okay with not taking a first round wide receiver. This year, I think it's definitely a serious concern. And if you can't come to an agreement with Devontae before the draft, all of a sudden you are in panic territory.
Yeah, if you don't have Devontae, the caveat to that is that if you end up deciding before the draft, okay, we'll trade Devontae Adams, maybe you get a player or a wide receiver back as part of the deal in addition to a draft pick, and that could change the equation going into the draft. But, you know, if you haven't traded him or signed him yet, and you have that uncertainty hanging over your head, you have to address it right away. And even if Devontae is coming back, the depth at this position is not great enough, and more talent and depth is needed. I agree with you, Randall Cobb either shouldn't be back or they'll cut him and sign him for something closer to the veteran's minimum. You know, if Aaron Rodgers wanted Randall Cobb back that badly, he could have taken a few less dollars and said, hey, keep Randall Cobb. I want to make sure he's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that. So, I like Cobb as a person also. I love his place in Packers history. But right now, at best, he's a fourth receiver on a good team with decent receivers. And you know, $9 million is just way too much to pay for a fourth receiver.
When you're looking at wide receivers who could be available at the Packers' first or second pick in the draft, the biggest name who has been falling in the draft and maybe would be within reach is Chris Olave. I don't know that I think he makes it that far. And if you're taking Chris Olave, I think that you probably want to be a team where Olave is your wide receiver too, just because of the mm-hmm. skill set that he has. He's he would be a fantastic MVS replacement. He is primarily a deep threat. He's got blazing speed. Almost every single catch I can ever think of in Chris Olave's career has been a deep, deep pass to the back of the end zone for a touchdown. One of the things that you love about Olave is his hands. He has fantastic hands, snags just about everything you throw his way. He is a decent route runner, but when you take into consideration the type of body he has, he's decently tall-ish. He's 6'1", not super tall, but he's very slight. He's only 185 pounds-ish, and he's an okay short range and intermediate route runner. This is a guy who I think even in the NFL is going to feast on being a deep threat, and that's great. But that's why I think that he is going to thrive if he is a wide receiver two behind a guy like Devontae or Justin Jefferson or somebody in this league. If you're trying to lean on him as your number one, I think he's going to disappoint. And again, I'm not even sure he's going to fall that far. Go ahead.
I mean, I have a question about that though, because like MVS was a fifth round pick, right, and he was more or less a one trick pony. He went deep. He stretched defenses. He was not consistent or reliable underneath. His hands were not great. As a fifth round pick, what you got from MVS was a good bargain. But if you're getting MVS 2.0, I don't want to have that be the 28th pick overall in the draft in the first round.
Olave is certainly not MVS 2.0. I'm just saying that if you look at what MVS brought to this team, in addition to the other things that Olave can do, Olave absolutely can do the things that MVS did for the team that we liked about MVS,
right,
that nobody else on the team can do. Devontae, Lazard, EQ, Amari, none of those guys have the ability to stretch the field in the way that MVS could. Now, Chris Olave can, and he brings a lot more to the table in addition to just that. And you mentioned that MVS's hands were always a concern. Olave, I mentioned one of his greatest assets was having fantastic hands. And definitely not hating on MVS as a fifth round pick, but would I have ever considered MVS worth drafting in the first round? No. Chris Olave, I think, is deserving of a first, maybe an early second round pick, mm-hmm. because he does bring so much more to the team. I just am questioning whether he has what it takes to take all the focal point of the defense in the way that Devontae or Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase or DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, any of these guys who can do so many things, and they can, they play so well that even when you got the number one cornerback and some help from the safety and maybe some other guys shading in to try and stop you and still beat them, I don't think that's Chris Olave. That might be his teammate, Garrett Wilson. I think right. Garrett Wilson absolutely might be that. Chris Olave is a guy who, Garrett Wilson very well might be the first wide receiver taken off the board. Mm-hmm. He's going to be probably a top 10 pick. Chris Olave, I think, just because of the fact that he thrives so much when he's the number two guy, here's part of the problem with MVS is that Davante Adams was always putting MVS in a situation where he should be feasting all the time. And instead, MVS would just once in a blue moon haul in a pass that would go for a massive gain.
Right.
And most of the time, the best thing that MVS could do is take a defender out of the mix by stretching the field. That's most of the time that was all MVS could muster up, because love him, but he was not a fantastic player.
No. And with Olave, you know, my concern more than anything is the size, 185, 190 pounds. Can he go over the middle? Can he take the punishment that he's going to take in the National Football League? Does he need to add muscle mass? And if so, does that slow him down? Those are questions that I would have about him coming out.
Well, I can answer you for that right now. He cannot put on muscle mass. This is just his body. He's been trying to put on weight for years. This is just who he is. If you like what he does and you want a guy who's a little bigger and can take more of that Lambeau Field cold weather beating, the guy for you is David Bell from Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'2", 205 pounds, considerably larger than Olave. Very similar game. Not quite as fast as Olave, but still stretches the field really effectively. He's a really good route runner. David Bell, the other maybe benefit to him is that I think he's going to fall considerably further down in the draft than Olave. You might be able to get him at the back of the second round. And when you're a team like the Packers, who has a value on a certain type of player, certain type of body, and would be using this guy that you're drafting in either Olave or Bell in that certain way, I think the better value for you is no question at the back of the second round instead of the back of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
David Bell is, to me, checks a lot of the same boxes that Olave does, and the stuff that you're maybe giving up with Bell in like some of the little bit of the deep speed and maybe a little bit of the just sticky hands that let nothing go by. I think that is probably worth the trade of, basically the equivalent of a second round pick there. So
yeah.
There's other guys who can do the same thing, but don't have the body type that David Bell does. Like Jahan Dotson, I think, is very comparable to Chris Olave in terms of his size. In fact, he's even a little bit shorter. And those three guys all have a very similar game. Right. David Bell is just so much bigger.
Mm-hmm. And the Packers do tend to prefer bigger receivers.
If you want to look at big receivers, one guy who is just shooting up the draft boards, Treylon Burks from Arkansas. When I look at Burks, it kind of makes me chuckle every time, because you know how you look at A.J. Dillon and he just is like built differently from all the other running backs on the field. Like Treylon Burks kind of does the same thing. They both of those guys kind of look a little bit like linebackers, just real thick legs, just very stout bodies. Treylon Burks is 225 pounds, 6'3", but he looks a lot heavier because of how much muscle he has. And he's not slow either, which is the crazy thing. He can move that big body down the field, and being 6'3", he's nice and tall. He is a red zone threat. That guy, I think maybe in a different universe where he adds a couple inches, he's a tight end,
right?
But like one of the fastest tight ends in the NFL.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, he probably would need to put on what, another 10 pounds or so and keep maybe
an inch 2 inches at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's got a totally different set of measurables. He might be an improvement over Alan Lazard, the way you're describing him with his size and his speed. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot. The good thing about this draft, it is a very deep draft at receiver. And I think there's a lot of value to be had in rounds 2 and 3, which is where the Packers tend to be very successful picking receivers anyway. I mean, you look at Antonio Freeman, Greg Jennings, Davante Adams, James Jones, so many, Jordy Nelson, all of those guys were day 2 picks who really panned out well for the Packers.
Last wide receiver I want to touch on before we move on is George Pickens, from Georgia. And one of the concerns that you have with him is his injury. He did have, what was it? I think he tore his ACL. Yeah, tore ACL and missed a lot of the 2021 season. The other negative, before we get into any of the positives on him, is that there have been some quotes from coaches that are a little bit concerning that what was the one? I don't think they called him lazy. But he's had a little bit of like off the field issues in the past. It's been a little while. All right. So here's the quote I was looking for. Definitely a lot of red flags with Pickens. ACL injury, never put up fantastic stats while he was in college, partly due to missing time. He's a bit thin and wiry, so future injuries are a concern. And his run blocking in college was mediocre. Then there was this quote. Has a number of off-the-field issues. He was suspended for violating team rules and has been ejected for punching another player. He has been called undisciplined by his own head coach. This will likely scare a number of NFL teams off. So, I do want to address the punching thing. Just say, Jair punched a tight end in the throat. And we still love Jair. So, you know, if you're a little bit chippy and you get upset in some moments... I don't know that I hate that. I think that I want the coaches to kind of work with you on that so you don't get ejected, so that, that you're not hurting the team that way. But Pickens is a guy that I just can't get enough of him. One of the things that made me first start looking at him is that he's kind of like begging the Packers to draft him, kind of the way Amari Rodgers did. Keeps saying, yeah, I want to go to the Packers. I'd love to play with Aaron Rodgers. And the other thing, you know, you have the injury concerns with him where he missed a lot of the 2021 season. Well, when he came back, he was the same player he had been pre-injury, which you love to see.
That is true.
Pickens makes just absurd catches. If you look at his highlight reels, which I try not to look at highlight reels when I'm scouting players, but like with Pickens, some of his catches are so ridiculous. He makes these diving catches. He wins a lot of 50-50 balls, makes all these tough, you know, toe tap, dragging out of bounds catches. One of his craziest catches, he basically like does a flip in the air and brings the ball down with like half of his hand, like just cradled against like the inside of his forearm. Just absurd plays. I love the effort that he puts in. On the field, just 100% every single snap, never takes a playoff. You mentioned while we were paused a minute ago that you had a concern about his blocking, which I 100% get. But also we had Matt LaFleur talking to us just a couple weeks ago at the Combine saying, you know, blocking is like all about attitude and like a want to, like we can teach blocking, but you have to want to block and you have to be willing to do it. And I just look at what Pickens does everywhere else in his game and the way he puts his body on the line, the selfless play that he has. I think you get him in a scheme in Green Bay where blocking is valued and really preached by the coaches. On paper, it feels to me like you can make it work with Pickens.
I would hope so. You know, if attitude is sort of a problem off the field, and you know, you talked about Jair Alexander punched a tight end in the throat one time. You know, for some reason, and this is going to sound ridiculous, maybe, but I don't mind it on a defensive player as much as I would mind it on an offensive player. It's a sort of a different attitude, and I think I want my defensive players to be a little more aggressive in that respect.
Makes sense to me. I don't know necessarily why you wouldn't like it as much on offense, but I guess I haven't thought about that before. I do have there's a couple things that come to mind where we've seen some of the Packers offensive players getting into it. Devontae definitely gets an attitude sometimes with players. We've seen him get in guys' faces. He's been flagged for that before. And I think about some of the offensive linemen that we've had get in tussles, especially, you know, with one single notable player for the Rams. We've had Lucas Patrick and Elton Jenkins. Both were getting in it with him, getting lippy, getting him all worked up to the point where he starts trying to choke the life out of him and still doesn't get flagged, you know, whatever. and you know, we've seen Aaron Rodgers get into it with guys here or there as well.
Usually with a wink and a nod, but yes, we've seen it.
Unless their name is Ndamukong Suh, then there's not so much winking.
No. And I think that's more on Sue than it is on anybody else, because he's the common denominator in a lot of those feuds. But yes.
Hey, let's talk about Jordan Love. This is the last thing I want to hit today. Jordan Love, what do you do with him now? Because the Aaron Rodgers contract is kind of in a bit of a weird no man's territory. First of all, we don't actually know how many years this contract is for, because nobody is reporting it the same way as each other. You know, we had originally heard it was 4 years, $200 million. And then Pat McAfee's coming out and he's saying, hey, Aaron Rodgers texted me and said that's not true. Aaron Rodgers then takes to Twitter and says, hey, just so you know, that number is not correct. And then the numbers come out and it kind of feels like that is correct after all. But then people are looking at it and they're saying, man, the structure of this is weird, because you for sure have him for 2022, 2023, and 2024. And after that, it's real murky. And are the final 2 years on this new extension, are they real years? Are they just void years that you could like unvoid? We're not really sure. But the one thing that I think is most affected by this is Jordan Love's future, because if Aaron Rodgers is here for 3 years, that still plays out the entirety of Love's rookie deal. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with keeping him as a backup from the Packers' perspective. You know, in 2019, when the Packers picked Rashawn Gary, I really wanted them to draft Dwayne Haskins with their first pick at 12. And not as the Aaron Rodgers replacement, but you have to think back to where we were. This was at the conclusion of the 2018 season. So we'd just gone the entire 2017 season watching Brett Hundley play. And then in 2018, Rodgers missed, I think he missed enough of two games in that season that we saw a substantial amount of DeShone Kizer. I think that was just week one and week 17. Are the games where we were watching DeShone Kizer, and it was just pathetic, miserable quarterback play. And I just wanted them to have a competent backup so badly that I was willing to burn a first or second round pick on it. And I think looking back, I was like way too desperate. Like, you can't burn a number 12 overall pick on a backup quarterback. But the idea of keeping Jordan Love around to continue to back up Aaron Rodgers is fine with me from the Packers perspective. However, I do think that it's very unfair to Jordan Love. If he requests a trade, I think the Packers should honor it, because I kind of think it's the right thing to do. And I think that the Packers, especially when you have a little bit of a public image issue out there with Davante Adams and Za'Darius Smith, I think that you have to have a little bit of care for how other players out there, prospective free agents, et cetera, are viewing the Packers organization of, are they going to screw me over in my eyes if push comes to shove? Or do they actually care about me as a person? Because that has always been one of the selling points of Green Bay, is that they treat their players really well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are in Northern Wisconsin, you have to have a good reputation for how you treat your players, because players don't want to come live in Northern Wisconsin. So,
yeah, beaches in Northern Wisconsin are not a year round attraction like they are in Miami. Let's put it that way.
You know, unless you're a penguin. you know, Jordan Love worked his butt off to become a first round draft pick. Then he gets drafted by the Packers, and you could certainly flip this around and say, yeah, well, he had the opportunity to show the Packers that he could be their franchise quarterback, and he didn't do that. And so therefore, Aaron Rodgers stays long term. But I don't know that the perception around the league especially among other players, is really going to be that Jordan Love was given a super fair shake at this. I think that right now the Jordan Love story is maybe heading in a direction of being a bit of a tragedy. And I don't know how much of that you can actually blame on Jordan Love as much as you can just the really difficult situation that he was drafted into. And I think if he asks for a trade to a team like the Colts or somewhere where he could go be a starter, I think the Packers really should honor that. What do you think?
You know, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, I will give some credit to Jordan Love because he was placed in a very difficult situation through no fault of his own. All the drama that Aaron Rodgers created, which in a large part was because of the drafting of Jordan Love. Love has been classy. He has handled this well. He has never spoken out in the media. He has never said anything against Aaron Rodgers, against the Packers organization. He's been a good soldier, so to speak. To me, from a Packers standpoint, the trade value of Jordan Love will probably never be higher than it is now because you have not a lot of quarterbacks in free agency who are worth pursuing, and this is a very weak draft class as well.
Right.
So for the teams that don't have a quarterback right now, if you don't, you know, Jordan Love would probably be the best quarterback in this year's draft if he were coming out this year. He probably has more value now than he will, assuming Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, he's going to play in mop-up duty and exhibition games. So he'll probably never have a higher value as a trade, as trade bait than he will now, unless Rodgers gets hurt, Love comes in and really shines, and then all of a sudden you could sit there and say, well, now he's proven that he's, you know, worth more and we can get more for him. But we don't know the term of this Rodgers contract. You're right about that. It looks to me, no matter how you sort of break it down, that it's a 2-year deal, probably a 3-year deal, and then you have the void years where if Rodgers retires after 2 years, is like $75 million worth of dead cap money. There's a whole lot of escalators, and if it goes beyond the 2 years, you're probably renegotiating with him anyway for another extension with void years to lower that cap hit. Either way, that takes you 2 more years, takes you to the end of Jordan Love's entry level contract. So he's either going to be the backup or he's going to fill in as the starter if Rodgers goes down. To me, if you can get a day two pick for Jordan Love, it helps Jordan Love. You control where he goes, so you don't have to necessarily, you know, he's not going to go to Chicago or Minnesota or Detroit. You can send him out of the conference even. It makes more sense to try to deal him now under the circumstances, as long as you feel comfortable finding another backup.
Speaking of another backup, I have got the guy, I think. And I don't think other teams are going to be falling over for this guy because he doesn't really project as a starter, but like maybe has the tools to be like an all-time great backup. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I think that this kid that I'm about to talk about will start and win games in the NFL. And I'm talking about Bailey Zappe from Western Kentucky. He was the 2021 MVP of Conference USA. He smashed, in fact, the passing yards and touchdowns records for FBS football. The knock on him, the reason that he's not a real early draft prospect is because he went to Western Kentucky and look, he blew his competition out of the water. He had 475 completions on 686 attempts, almost 6,000 passing yards. He had like 400, what was it, 458? 58 yards per game, I think. 62 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 168.8 passer rating. This dude has absolutely what it takes. He's a good leader. He is definitely above average when it comes to athleticism. Mm-hmm. So he can bail out of the pocket and escape. Got really good footwork. He does not have a big arm, but he is just extremely accurate. He's not going to push the ball super far downfield, but wherever he wants the ball to go, he just wills it to that spot. He can throw it on a dime. His deep ball is okay. It's still accurate when he throws deep, but it doesn't have that zip and that speed to get down there, which is an issue. It's a very catchable deep ball, but those kind of slow, really catchable deep balls are also catchable for defenders. Right. So that's an issue. But Bailey Zappe on NFL Mock Draft Database.com, he's projected as a fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. The consensus is the 133rd pick, which is in the fourth round, I think late fourth round. And the earliest he's been featured on any mock drafts that they're aware of is number 115.
Okay.
So this is the guy for me. I think if he's there in the fifth round, if he falls down to the fifth round, take him and get what you can for Jordan Love, because Jordan Love deserves a shot somewhere else. And I don't think that the returns that you've gotten at this point for investing all your time into Jordan Love are enough for me to say, no, let's keep sticking with it to see if maybe we want to re-sign him to another deal after his rookie contract is over and Rodgers is still the starter.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. My big concern with Zappe is his size. He's only 6 feet tall. Russell Wilson.
He's 6'1". Fan. He's 6'1".
Well, okay.
And he's a backup. Come on. No,
but the other question is this. I'm not going to argue whether he's 6 or 6'1". I mean, I'll split the difference with you and say 6.5. But
all right.
The question is, if Rodgers goes down, are you saying it doesn't matter who the backup is? The season is more or less over? Or are you comfortable with him being ready as a rookie to be that backup guy?
I am comfortable with him. That's why I want it. That's why I'm saying this is the guy. If I did, if I said that it just didn't matter who it is, if Rodgers goes down, then stick with Kurt Benkert because we love him as a person.
Right.
Bailey Zappe. I said at the beginning, I think he's going to start and win NFL games. You can't compare people to Tom Brady because you just can't. But you look at the style of play that he has. He gets the ball out on time, not necessarily too quickly or, like just trying to get the ball out of his hands desperately, because he can hold on to it. He can run and scramble a little bit, but it's just about distributing the ball really accurately with precision, timing. That is just invaluable. And you get a guy who can be the cap, just a captain of the offense and a leader and just a distributor of the football, that'll win you games in a pinch. And if you're in a situation where maybe you're playing in the wild card and you're up by 3 points and Rodgers goes down, he can't go back into the game. I think Bailey Zappe is a guy that you would feel comfortable rolling the dice on if you're going to throw him out there and try and seal that win there.
All right. Well, let's see. I mean, the quarterback who I've heard him compared to most in the stuff that I've read is Gardner Minshew. And as a backup, I'm not complaining. I think that'd be a great backup, comparison. Now, maybe he needs a little time to mature to become Gardner Minshew, but, that's a decent comparison as far as backups go.
Alrighty. Well, this was a super fun episode. I like getting to talk about some specific guys in the draft. We have at this point right now in our day, not your day, but as we're recording this, we have just a little under 2 hours left before the Packers have to be under the cap. So you guys all probably know what happened and maybe you can tell us about it. But that does it for us today. We'll be right back here next week. Follow us on Twitter at @GilPackers and at JJ Leahy to stay up to date on all things Packers or to ask us questions. You can email us at asknohuddle@gmail.com. Make sure you're subscribed to Packers Talk on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to PackersTalk.com for powering our show, and thank you for listening. Until next time, go Pack Go!
Go Pack Go!
You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.